The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is a Geek Leader Podcast, and I'm your host, John Rauta. This show is all about helping us grow as leaders, become better technologists, and improve our lives, both at work and at home. I hope you enjoy the show and learn a lot. Hello, world, and welcome to episode 194 of the Geek Leader Podcast. I'm your host, John Rauta, and today's sponsor is Private Internet Access. If you've ever surfed the web and wanted to do it securely, especially when you're traveling or using someone else's network, you definitely need Private Internet Access. Private Internet Access allows you to have a secure VPN without them logging what data you're doing, what transactions you're making, or anything like that, to connect to anywhere in the world. You can also change your default location so it appears as if you're coming from a different place. Why is this helpful, you say, if you're not doing anything nefarious? Well, it's really helpful if you want to test DNS resolution from different places and different time zones. It's a really cool tool, and it's not very expensive at all. You can get plans starting at $3.99 a month, and you can find out more by going to ageekleader.com/VPN. Again, that's geekleader.com/VPN.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, geek leaders. Today on the show, I've got Richard Metcalf, and he's a smart guy. He graduated with a master's degree from Oxford University, and he's an executive coach and a leadership consultant, helping people like me and you become better leaders, become the leaders that we can be. He co-founded X Quadrant, a consulting company. So, Richard, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So if you don't mind, just tell the audience a little bit about kind of what you're doing today and how your career has led you to where you are.
Yeah, of course. Well, obviously talking about myself is my number one topic. So if you've got a spare 6.5 hours, we'll be. I'll try and keep it brief, but hopefully insightful. So I'm a Brit, as you can probably tell, although I now live in Paris, just outside Paris in France. I moved to Paris just after, so as you said, I went to Oxford, left there, joined a consulting company focused on the tech sector, so tech, media, and telecoms. And after about a year or two there, I got an offer from one of the partners in the consulting firm to come and spend a year with him in Paris to help build out the office there. I thought that sounded like a nice way to spend a year, so I took him up on the offer and never ended up going home. So that was over 20 years ago now, and I've stayed here. I'm now married to a French, lovely French woman. I have a couple of kids who are obviously binational, and so that's where it is on the home front. Business-wise, so I became a partner in this strategy consulting company. And I think strategy is just something which always fascinates me, because I think I have this, I describe it as strategic laziness, right? It's just like, for me, the ideal thing would be, you know, find out how to get the biggest possible result with the minimum possible effort. And that seems to me to be a good way to live life.
Would you say that's your definition of strategy?
In many ways, yeah. I mean, I think that often, I see strategy as a lens, right? So I say most people don't have strategies, they have smategies, right? They just have a smattering of ideas and things and goals and hopes and nice to haves. And there's so many things that there's no focus, right? And you don't have that lens that really brings the focus into what is it that I need to do. And I suppose for strategy, strategy is what you invest in today that makes life easier tomorrow,
Yeah. I think that's really good. I think one of the books I read recently was called The Phoenix Project. I don't know if you've read that or not, but it's a novel, like a fiction. It's a fictional novel, but it was written with the idea of helping technology leaders understand, you know, how to get rid of technical debt and to move a company forward. And one of the things they talk about is it's more important to do the work that'll make your life easier tomorrow than the work that has to be done today.
And
focusing on that, you know, that, and it's actually helped me think about things of instead of just doing this 5-minute thing now, how can I spend an hour so that I never have to do that 5-minute thing again?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember that actually must be my grandfather was he was an engineer and, you know, obviously at the time, mechanical engineering was probably his major thing. I remember that he would mechanical and electrical. Oh, he was a broad guy, but but I always remember his garage, right? Where he kept his car. He has multiple cars. In fact, he was a bit of a car addict. But I always remember my father showing me that, you know, my grandfather would always go off and make a tool on the lathe, so that he could then do the job in 2 minutes. Right. Rather than, so he might spend 2 hours on the tool on the lathe to build the tool to help him do the job in 2 minutes, rather than kind of bodge it, you know, with a spanner or whatever, and do it in about 20 minutes, but not have the right tool for the job, which he couldn't use for next time. And since that's the same thing we're just saying, right, that you do the hard work once and then everything else becomes easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that, new leaders struggle with sometimes, because they feel like they have to always do the thing, you know, fix the squeaky wheel, do the thing that's a problem right now, and don't have time to focus on the future. And do you have a way that new leaders could possibly free up some time so that they could help focus on that future? Because, you know, we feel like sometimes there's so much going on, everything's critical, everything's urgent, and we don't have time to focus on that future and that strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'll tell you, this kind of came out a little bit, just to perhaps close the loop on our previous discussion there. It came out in the next part of my career. So I went from this consulting company where I was a big fish at that point in a relatively small pond, right? There was a few hundred people there. And I then joined Cisco, right? Huge tech company, as you know, tens of thousands of people. I was in a relatively senior role, but still there's, you know, a company that size, there's always plenty of people, many people more senior, but also, you know, just the complexity of that organization. And I actually went into a team there that was really struggling because it was doing great work, but it hadn't got traction, right, to do more, right? It hadn't got margin to do more. And we can talk about some of those, I'll get into some of those traps in a second and how we can get out of that. But I think the kind of the key thing for us was to really realize that when we kind of set ourselves a bigger goal, then the question became, well, you know, actually, this is what is possible, could be possible. And now what do you want to do with all this other stuff? This is lower level stuff. This is not where we're going to make our impact. But I think it's that act of imagination to start with, right? Really seeing what could be possible. And so I suppose my first principle that I'd tell people is stop trying to free up time. It never works, right? When you it's like creating a vacuum. It's really, really hard to create a vacuum because the air just comes right back in again. And so the better way of doing it is to focus on higher value tasks. I was speaking with a CEO, with quite a lot of CEOs and executives, C-level executives. And I was talking with one CEO and he said that he became a master of delegation overnight. I was like, wow, that's impressive. That's what people struggle with. How do you do that? Well, he said, well, it's very simple. My wife became seriously ill. So I had to take care of her, right? And when you realize that, that's the most important activity for you, then suddenly delegating becomes very easy, right?
Yeah.
you make it happen because there's something more important to do. And so I'd encourage people, you know, everyone to really think about, well, what's the higher value task that I'm not getting to? Mm-hmm. And to really get clear about that and why it's important. There's a little mental model I like to use with my clients, which is to help them to say, well, what made you successful last year? And then what's going to make you successful next year? And they're not the same things. The issue is most of us, without thinking, we're just repeating the strategies that made us successful last year, right? So for many people, that's really being in the details, mastering the technology or the processes or the systems. We're getting into all of that detail, right? Solving the problems ourselves, you know, being the expert. That's mm-hmm. often where we start. That's what made us successful last year. What makes us successful next year is actually empowering other people to do that stuff, right? And for us working on the next level of problems, or perhaps providing our input on a much more precise basis to those kind of problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what I say, the strategy or shift number one, which is, you know, stop trying to free up time.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's one of the things that delegating, I think that's a struggle that we all come into, because we feel like, you know, we've been told before that leaders need to, you know, be the ones doing the heavy lifting and doing the harder work, but we don't realize that, you know, sometimes strategy and the things that are, you know, are the harder work and is the more difficult task sometimes, that, so you do have to delegate some of the other tasks in order to make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And often, you know, I would say to people, it's really hard to make time for strategic thinking, right? Because it sounds vague and ambiguous and you're not quite sure what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. So if you put something in your diary, you need to make it sound something that you actually know what you're going to do. You're not going to spend the first part of the time trying to decide what it is you're meant to be thinking about.
Yep.
Right? Just having musing time, it doesn't really work for a lot of people. It's best to spend 3 minutes right now with a notepad to say, what are things I would like to think through, or what are things I'd like to work on? Right? Or what are things I'm not getting to that I need to be getting to, and just jot them down quickly, you know, just brainstorm with yourself for 60 seconds and then circle one of those and then block out time to work on it.
So when you talked about, you know, we talked before this started about the four shifts that you wanted to talk about or go up over during the session. And you talked about shift one, stop trying to free up time. Shift two is examine your beliefs first. I want to get into a little bit about how, as a leader, we even know what our beliefs are. How do we figure that out and understand? Because sometimes we're just, you know, coding along one day, and the next thing you know, we are promoted, and now we have to lead people and manage people and figure this whole thing out.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. This is why I guess one of the powers of coaching, right? Because after I had spent over 10 years at Cisco, I decided that what my own sweet spot was really helping people, helping smart, successful people find their next level. Simple as that, right? Mm-hmm. That creates impact in the world, makes the world a better place. It creates impact in their teams and organizations, and makes their organizations a better place. And it generates results, which is what people need, right? To kind of get ahead and to thrive. And this point about beliefs is a key part of the coaching conversation, because, you know, you have that first level of tasks and facts, and we think, oh well, you know, we need a productivity hack, right? We need to get a new app, we need to you know, whatever it is, right? But actually, it's going to be our mindset that's really holding us back. It's our beliefs. And so I'll give you an example of just that playing out. I was speaking with a mid-level leader. They're actually a finance manager in a tech company, and this person, very very strong performer, very very well seen, a high, you know, fast track leader, and yet was totally submerged in operations, was doing a load of stuff, was seen as the go-to person on many tasks, but it meant that he was totally overloaded. He couldn't get to the next level. He knew he had to delegate, but he was finding it hard. And we went through it, and I started to realize that he said, well, I'm a perfectionist. I have high standards, and, you know, I don't trust my team at this point. I don't think they know enough, et cetera. They haven't got all the experience that I've had. You know, I think they're not going to deliver the right quality. So I said to him, so what you're telling me is, at this point, you are basically the high-performing janitor. In other words, you know, you are scrubbing those floor tiles and they're 100% shiny. They are, you know, they're absolutely perfect. They're, you know, you couldn't get a cleaner floor, right? But you're actually meant to be, you know, the finance director or whatever it is, right? Or the CFO, you know, you have the potential to be the CFO in this organization. And what I was trying to, and he got the message, right? You know, the message was, you know, you can be working on, you know, you can create perfection, but if you're creating perfection on low value areas, then you're actually doing yourself and the company a disservice. And so again, I try to use these kind of stories and images to help people kind of think of what they're doing in a new light. So obviously you get something out of it, right? Any belief you have, anything that you're doing. So when you're saying, well, I can't possibly ... that's the cue to examine your beliefs, right? I think, John, you asked, you know, how do I know it? When it's like, mm-hmm. well, when you basically go, it's not possible, because we live in a world constructed by our own beliefs about what is and what's not possible. So, you know, I couldn't do this. I couldn't at all give this to my team. Well, you know, why not? Well, because it has to be the right level. Well, what would happen if it wasn't? You know, and you can work it through. But I think you have to get comfortable with discomfort. You have to feel this is a stretch. You know, this is a stretch. This is the first time my team's done it. But it's going to be okay. I'm going to be there as a backup, et cetera, et cetera. So the message here, I suppose, John, is to slow down and to really think about what am I not considering, right? Or what have I ruled out? Mm-hmm. And it can be hard to do by yourself, right? That is why working with a coach or a third party or just somebody who's independent, it might just be your spouse, right? Or a friend, but somebody who can basically not believe the stories that you're telling yourself is really important.
Yeah. I think having that person that you can bounce these ideas off of and ask you like the tough questions. And one of the things that I'll always do whenever I have, you know, one of the leaders underneath me or somebody talking, you know, about a problem that they have and they'll say, you know, well, we can't do this, or it's not possible to do this. I'll say, test that assumption, you know, just go and test it, you know, test the assumptions. You know, we always make assumptions, but how do we know for sure? Well, in science, we have to test them, right? We have to run experiments. We have to, and they'll say, well, this is a job. It's not, well, experiment, you know, take a small project and experiment and see what happens, you know, and grow it from there. To take something that's, if you fail, it's not that big of a deal. You can recover quickly.
Yeah. The other phrase I like to use is be curious, not dubious. Right. So basically stick the word how on top of it. So rather than can I do this, it's how can I do this? How would I do this? If I had to do it, if someone's going to literally put a gun to my head and say, you have to do it, how would I do it? And get curious, get creative. I find that kind of attitude of curiosity rather than, you know, and asking yourself new questions rather than feeling you've got all the answers and the answers aren't a yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think curiosity is one of those, almost a lost skill these days, you know, is to be curious about things and how things work and how to optimize and you know, learn new ways of doing things that could be better, or maybe they're not. Maybe you learn and you say, well, it's not better. Now I know that, you know, I'm more confident in what we are doing and that is correct. That's got value too.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think that idea of being curious enough to have a bit of time that you waste, right? In other words, curiosity is a bit of a trial and error thing, right? You're going to have to try a few avenues, see what works, see what doesn't work. And I think giving yourself a bit of time, a bit of margin in your life to do that, again, it's a high value activity. It doesn't feel like it, but that bit of research and development time is going to be, you know, that will probably be where your breakthrough comes, right? Because at the moment, everything's set up to get at the results you're currently getting, right? You know, you've got a perfect model to stay where you are. And so when you get curious about, well, which bits of this model could I change, right? Which bits would be different? That's where you start to find interesting things coming out of it.
Yeah. And I like what you said there about the margins, having that ability to have free space, because if you fill up your calendar 100%, you never have an opening for an opportunity for something new to pop in. And, you know, I always block off, I block off 2 hours a day, every day, you know, on my calendar. That's, you know, I think I labeled it, research on 1 hour and project thoughts on the other hour. And they're both just strategy sessions. They're time for me not to put anything there and to think about the work that we're doing and just spend that time in thought, because, mm-hmm. you know, if I don't intentionally take time to strategize, then I'll never have time to strategize. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things I say and I do is, you know, separate strategy from execution. So, you know, you can't be thinking and doing at the same time, basically. Right. You need a time to think and a time to do. So you can kind of lock and load. So this kind of brings me, I guess, to my third shift thinking about it. So perhaps we can go there. So
yeah.
Shift number one is stop trying to free up time, right? Focus on higher value tasks instead. And shift number two is examine your beliefs first, because you don't need a productivity hack. You need to shift your mindset. Then shift number three is really to think in terms of acceleration and not speed. And in many ways, we have kind of covered this in a way, because we were talking about, you know, strategy as being the art of investing now to be better in the future, right? To have an easier life in the future. And so I like to say, well, do you have a system of get better at getting better, right? How are you getting better at getting better? One of the ways I recommend doing this is to block out time at various cadences. So I do a yearly, I do a quarterly, I do monthly, and I will do weekly. And at a micro level, I do daily as well, to really say, like, how am I moving forward? Or, you know, what are my top three, for example, for this period, right? For this year, for this quarter, for this month, for this week, and so forth. And for a while I did it and I didn't feel that satisfied with it. What I now do is I literally have a Google sheet, in fact, in my world, but it could be anything, where I've literally written down, you know, for this year, three core outcomes, right? Three things I love to achieve. And then for the quarter, again, well, what three projects would move me closest to those outcomes? And then for each month, I then look and say, well, what month-long activity do I need to do now to take me towards success on those quarterly outcomes? And so on. And what it does is it just makes it so simple, right? And obviously, if you're in teams, you have to kind of negotiate that with your team a little bit, but you can do it as a personal thing as a leader, because the team's tasks aren't always your tasks. So you can do it for yourself, or you can sit down with your team and do it as a group. But when you get clear on no more than three strategic up levels, should we say, strategic projects that are going to move things up, and probably not even three. I mean, I like it to skiing, you know, like do one, that's the green run. If you do two, you're probably on a red run. And if you do three, you're probably on a black run. So, because you're talking here about getting out of operations to work on investing time into things which are going to have a payoff a month or a quarter or more down the road.
Yeah. I love that idea of limiting your, I guess you would say, your work in progress, or the things that you're going to be focusing on, your projects at the time, or your goals to three. And I like the skiing analogy, which, you know, I'm actually going snowboarding next week. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Nice. Yeah.
But yeah, that makes perfect sense about how, you know, if you're just doing one, that's the easy route, right? That's the, you're warming back up, you're getting back into things. And doing two, now that's probably where your sweet spot is. Three would be the most fun, but also kind of the most challenging and the most risky.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you have to do is look at what's your operational burden at this moment, right? In other words, if you've got a whole load of operational stuff on, if you like, take a piece of paper on the left-hand side, just write a whole bunch of all your tasks, operational tasks. This is all stuff that's just keeping the lights on, just keeping the machine going, right? I mean, just doing, for example, if you're in sales, it's just all your general sales activity. Okay. Even if hitting your sales goal is your number one outcome, right? Then it's still operations, right? Because you're just doing the work, right? You're doing the work. But over on the right hand side, there you can, you know, you write one, two, or three points down, and there you put the things to help you get better at getting better, right? Those strategic investments that you want to make, right? So it might be, you know, script out my sales messages if you're in a sales world, right? You know, if you're in the, you know, IT world, it could be, you know, finally hand off, you know, the systems knowledge to one of my team on this one system, so I never have to touch it again. you know, or whatever it is. In other words, you identify the things which are not just getting your job done. So in a sense, it doesn't feel that it's going to move the needle. It's not going to drive the results this quarter. But what you're doing, as we've discussed, is you're getting ready for all the subsequent quarters, right? It's going to be easier. Mm-hmm. You're going to have one less thing off your plate. Again, one guy I was working with, you know, he had one task, which only he was the only person in the company who knew how to do it. And it was taking him 20% of his time. And it was not, frankly, not, you know, it was an important task. But it wasn't a task that was going to get him promoted, shall we say. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know, it was a task he was doing last year, not the task he should be doing next year. And actually, when he realized that he was spending 20% of his time, pretty much almost a quarter, actually. I think he breathes it a day a week. So he's spending a day a week doing this, and it was not moving him or the company or anything forward. He was just on the hamster wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Really think about, you know, really slow down and think, what would the one or two things be if I could accomplish those in the next few weeks that would actually make, you know, would actually free up time, would actually get me out of the operations just that little bit and have just that little bit more margin. Because as we've said, it's a flywheel, right? If you create a little bit of margin, you can reinvest that
right
in something else, and you can reinvest it again, which is why some people almost power ahead. In fact, looking about it, it's probably why I powered ahead in my own career. I haven't thought about it in that way before, but because I was really relentless in, if I have to do something twice, I'm going to figure out a system so that I don't have to do it three times, pretty much. And, you know, early part of my career, I was doing strategy consulting. I was doing, you know, financial models and things. You know, I had like the most optimized, automated, you know, template for building financial models than any of my peers. So when they had a project, they had to spend a week building it out. And when I had a project, I spent a few hours building it out. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The difference is enormous. It was probably days.
Absolutely.
And suddenly you're able to do more things. You're able to help in sales activities. You're able to act, you know, help in growing new business, whatever it is that takes your own career and impact forward. So that's acceleration, not speed. So
yeah, I think that's cool. I think that's a great, a great thing that leaders need to focus on is, you know, not to be focusing on the speed, but how do you get to that, you know, acceleration, how to get there quickly, and, you know, having your templates and, you know, everything already lined up and ready to go because you spent the time ahead of time, you know, preparing and being ready. When new projects come, you can just roll into that format and move forward. I think that's a great tool. Let's get into shift four.
Yeah, shift four. Yeah, this is, I call it work the room.
Yeah, this is an interesting one for me.
Yeah, I think this is a game changer, really. It's what most people don't do. And it's, you need to renegotiate your agreements if you want to level up. So, give you a simple example, right? You know, your boss expects you to be doing something. You decide actually that's a low value activity for you. You need to be delegating it to the team, or you need not to be doing it anymore. Right? Now, you can't just decide not to do it. You probably need to negotiate that with your boss, right? You're going to have that conversation. And this occurs in all sorts of areas. Let me give you a story to bring this to life. I was working with a C-suite exec in a $2 billion company, so very senior guy. And during one of our coaching sessions, he said, "Hey, you know, Richard, I'm struggling a bit because I've got these transformational projects that you've been helping me work on, and that's going quite well, but I'm not really having enough time on those projects. I'm not spending enough time driving them forward." So we explored it, and email was a culprit. He said, "Yeah, I'm spending too much time on email. I know, but it's just that, you know, I want to be trustworthy, you know. I want to be a trustworthy leader, right? I want to like get back to my team members and get back to my colleagues in a timely fashion if they send me an email. I want to be reliable." And so he was asking me for kind of some productivity tips. And I said, "Well, you don't need a tip from me. In fact, it's not going to serve you. In fact, no tip I can give you is going to come up against that self-identity that you've just told me, that when you do your email, you're being trustworthy and reliable. Right? It's just not possible. Yeah, for him, getting to inbox zero on a regular basis and knowing he'd done all his emails was him being trustworthy and reliable. This is going back to beliefs a little bit, okay? But when we talked about that, so I said to him, well, you know, what would your boss, what would the CEO be wanting you to be focusing on right now? I guess, well, I guess these transformational projects, they're going to have a massive impact. Yeah, and what about your team? Well, yeah, I guess they're you know, the employees, they're really looking forward to these projects happening as well, because it's going to make everyone's life a lot easier. Great. And what about the shareholders? And yeah, he kind of went around the different stakeholders, and he realized that, yeah, absolutely, these transformational projects were absolutely the highest value activity. So my point to him was, well, at that point, are you not being untrustworthy and unreliable when you're spending time in your damn email rather than work on these transformational projects? Ah, yes. So at that point, his self-belief, his self-identity has shifted, right? His beliefs have shifted. But we're not in examine your beliefs at this point. We're in work the room. So what's the relevance? The relevance is you can't just stop replying to emails when your colleagues have got used to you replying within, you know, minutes or hours, right? You can't just stop, right? You have to go through the extra step of figuring out, of negotiating up. You need to explain to your manager, you know, say, look, I've decided email is really sucking up time, and I'm not getting to these strategic projects that I need to be doing. So I'm going to, you know, is it okay, boss, if I, you know, just get, you know, just check my emails and deal with them however often it is, once a day or, you know, whatever, you know, and if you need to speak to me urgently, I totally get it, you just give me a call. Whatever it is you want to negotiate with your boss, right? So you create the agreement with, you know, upwards first. And then you might then work, you know, go to your peers, right? And let them know, say, look, you know, I know you count on me for a lot of things. I just need to tell you right now, I'm super busy. I've got some really major projects on. And so just to let you know, I'm not going to be so responsive on my email because I am, because I'm really heads down on some major transformational work. If you do need to get in touch with me, you know, if it's really urgent, then, you know, whatever, right? Call me, text me, whatever. But yeah, if it can wait a day, then don't worry, you know, I will get back to you.
Yeah, I went through that process. It was actually after my second child was born, and I realized that I was just spending too much time at work. And I evaluated kind of where my time was going. Basically, I just got a spreadsheet and I booked out every 15-minute block of the day, tried to write down what I was doing. And I did that for 2 weeks and then went back and looked and like realized I was spending way too much time responding to emails and sitting in meetings that I didn't feel like I got value out of.
Yeah.
And so what I did at that point is I went to my boss and said, look, I'm going to not keep Outlook open all the time. I'm going to close it. And when I open it in the morning, you know, about like 10 o'clock. So the first thing I'm gonna do is get it to work. I'm gonna do some work. And then I'm gonna open Outlook at 10 o'clock and figuring out what's gonna train wreck my day now. And I'm gonna take care of that. And then I'm not gonna check it again after I finish, you know, 10, 15, 10, 20, whenever it was. I will close it. I'm not gonna open it again until I get back from lunch. But if you need me between then, you know, text me, send me a message, something like that. You can tell me to go check my email. I'll go check it. But during that time, I'm not gonna do it. I'm gonna wait. And then I also went to all the people that I had meetings with that I didn't feel like I got value out of. And I just sent them a nice little message and said, hey, I'm not going to make this week's meeting. If you feel like it's extremely urgent, I can shuffle things around and attend. Otherwise, I'll be happy to send you any information prior to the meeting. Just let me know what questions you have and I'll get to you. And that went just fine. It was only like a couple of, I think I did it for like 4 or 5 meetings and maybe one meeting I really needed to go to.
Right.
And I repeated that process until it was understood that I'm not going to be at these meetings, so take me off of it. and people got used to the fact of the way I would respond to emails. And then I eventually left that company, went to another company. And during the final interview that I had with the boss, I said, I want to just be clear about the way that I, one of the things that I do is I focus very heavily on making sure that I'm doing the right thing for the company, and I'm spending the my time in the best way to advance the company forward. Mm. And one of the ways of doing that is not being super fast at responding to email, you know, because when I have to shift away from doing something that has a lot of value and respond to an email that may not provide that much value, it takes me a lot of time to get back.
Absolutely.
So when I started this new role, I didn't check email. I didn't respond right away. And, you know, coming in to a role and having that expectations that you're not going to be responding right away makes it a lot easier than having to switch from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But again, it does, but it's kind of also in our mind, right? Because the rule is people just get used to whatever constraints are presented with to them. Yeah. And the question is, are we going to be the free agent in this? Are we going to be the unconstrained point, or are we going to have some conditions, right, and some barriers and some boundaries? And and this applies, as you said, you know, to emails, to meetings, absolutely, you know, to tasks, to projects, you know, to a whole range of areas. This idea of really getting clear and building an agreement with the different people, and actually, the more senior you get, it can get difficult, right? People expect you to be in meetings; they want you there. Mm-hmm. I'll help my clients often, who are often very senior leaders, to build effectively policies that they can use themselves to check whether a meeting is really worth their attention, but also so that their team starts to anticipate and starts to realize, actually, you know, he's not going to want to be in this meeting. Right. because I don't want to ask him to be in this meeting because I know he's going to ask me these three questions and I know that I can't give him three yeses to them. Mm-hmm. I mean, the questions might be, you know, does it have an agenda? You know, you know, is my presence, you know, like, can the meeting start without me? There's another one I heard from a key leader, you know, or, you know, what's the unique contribution that you're looking for me, yeah. Right, in this meeting. And you build your own kind of like mini set of questions, and once people get to know those questions, they start to be able to anticipate, and they either come to you with better, well thought out meetings, perhaps shorter meetings, or they realize that you're not going to come because it's not how it works.
Yeah, no, I think that's key for growing as a leader, is that your shift forward, renegotiating those things that you're going to be doing and what's important. And, you know, being able to show the leadership, you know, but I call it leading up, being able to lead your boss to where you need to be successful, but also lead down too, and to set expectations with your peers and with your reports and everybody. I think that's extremely crucial. And the way you set it out that way, renegotiating those boundaries and those things are crucial. And I think that's an excellent way of saying that.
Yeah, well, I think what I'd say is, when you look at these four shifts, and there are a few others, but I think these are kind of really key ones, because you know, when you're focusing on higher value tasks, when you're focusing on how you think about all of this, you know, when you're focusing on the whole concept of acceleration, right, and how much time am I spending in operations versus working on my business, right, or working on my my role and leveling up, mm-hmm. and then this idea of, am I actually having the conversations that matter, or am I just being stuck within this kind of prison of expectations and what feels like the imposition of the rest of the company or whatever it is, or customers upon me? And I think when you start to change those, then you can create really a different reality, and it can be so dramatic that people can literally not believe they're in the same role. And it's why, as I said, some people are always overloaded, always working hard, you know, always, you know, at the edge of burnout, and why others kind of move up and up and up and do new things and seem to have a huge impact and have fun doing it. Now, I'm not saying it's only that. Of course, there's all sorts of other reasons. But I think we do have a lot of power to be able to redesign the activities and how we spend our time.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, this has been a great conversation. One thing I did want to ask you that's a little bit off topic and different from this is that you have a podcast. You recently started a podcast. You want to talk a little bit about that and about some of the things that you talk about on that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, let me do that. And let me just explain perhaps the last part, because we started at the very start of this conversation on my life story, and we told you that we'd never get to the end of it. But I talked about being at Cisco. And then, so the podcast is obviously part of my new company, X Quadrant, our new company, the company I founded when I left Cisco a few years ago. And what X Quadrant is all about is helping multiply the impact of already successful leaders and people, right? People who are have already got a great CV in many ways, and yet know they've got a new level available to them. And the way that I do that, and my team helps people do that, is to really remove those roadblocks, right? What's the limiting factor that's holding you back or your team back from the next level of success? And let's work on the limiting factor, because no one's got time to work on everything. You don't need to work on everything, right? It's like, where is the limiting factor? And when you identify the limitation and you work on it, then you free up, suddenly you almost like, it's like a, I don't know what the example is, like a balloon that expands, right? You know, you suddenly remove a constraint, it now expands to a bigger level. And then you can address another limiting factor. And that is a really, again, it's like the surgical, precise way to help people create a lot more impact without a lot more effort. And that's really the idea of the podcast. The podcast is called the Impact Multiplier CEO, the Impact Multiplier CEO podcast. And it's got those words, right? CEO, because it's really for CEOs, and I do interview a lot of CEOs on the show, but it's also people that think like CEOs or want to think like CEOs. In other words, want to have that sense of ownership and ambition and kind of creating impact at scale. Impact, because it's the word that's really important to me. I think, you know, financial impact is one thing, but more important to me is, you know, what impact do we have on the people around us, on the world around us, externally and also within our own team. And then multiplier, because it's actually quite hard to just, you know, incrementally improve your impact. Actually, that's just the hard way, where you kind of have to work harder and harder. But when you start to think about multiplying impact, then you're playing a different game, right? Then you're like, well, what is that constraint? What's the thing that, you know, how can I 10x my impact? 100x my impact over the next 20 years, right? You know, can I do that? Is that even possible? How would I do that? And when you start to get curious about how to multiply your impact, that's kind of where I get excited, and I suppose where I tend to find clients who, you know, who resonate with me, right? Who want to kind of play that game with me. So that's the Impact Multiplier CEO podcast. You can find it obviously in all the good places, or you can head over to my website, xquadrant.com/podcast, where you see all the different seasons we've done with all the different episodes there.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely link that up in the show notes as well. People can find that at geekleader.com. And Richard, thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Thanks for all your insight and helping, you know, the tech leaders out there today.
No, you're welcome. And say, I love tech. It's been my background, right, for the last 25 years. So it's been a great conversation to have with you, John. If people are interested just in this idea around productivity, they might be interested in going to, I've got a small guide around these four shifts, these four uncommon insights that go into a little bit more detail, provide a few visual tools that people could actually use to work through for some of these areas in a bit more detail. I'm sure you can link that up in the show notes as well.
Absolutely.
But it's basically xquadrant.com/go/productivity. So pretty easy to find.
All right. I'll link that up in the show notes as well, so folks can see that. And Richard, thanks again. I really appreciate having you on.
You're welcome. Thanks, John.
If you enjoyed that episode, please leave a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. I'd greatly appreciate that. And also, don't forget to check out merch. We have some t-shirts that I've designed that are on at geekleader.com. You can click on the merchandise section there and check that out. And also, don't forget about the books from our guests. So if you like this guest and other guests that have written books, please go ahead and check that out at geekleader.com. I would greatly appreciate it, and I'm sure they would too.